We got another super chat from A. John Starkarian.
Nice name.
Yeah. Do you think there was a connection to Sam's leaving the Citadel and the death of his father, even though he had no way of knowing? And this brings up something I was going to mention later, something that someone brought up in the Monday live stream of Aziz and Sean. It's the idea that the Maesters don't know that Sam didn't find this out. If they, you know, find out that he left, they might think that he left in a rush and upset and in an upset mood because his parents, I mean, his father and brother died and
yeah,
they didn't tell him. And they didn't tell him. So I don't think it had anything to do with Sam leaving, but I think it might make it so that the Maesters aren't really mad at him.
Yeah, it might be a convenient story telling trick to kind of like how they had the Tarleys summoned to King's Landing so they couldn't chase after Heartsbane. It's like, well, let's write this in a way that it works. Mm-hmm. And that might be it. I mean, I think it's clever. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying it's like a shortcut or anything, but because they have to do shortcuts to make this adaptation work. So I forgive them for the occasional one, even though there's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Right on. We have another super chat here.
Yeah, we do.
From Dornish Dan. Males in major houses are an endangered species, meaning major upward mobility for minor houses. Does/will this occur in book? I do think so, yes. It's something that George has done consistently throughout the history of A Song of Ice and Fire, is shown the waxing and waning of the powers of certain houses. Sometimes they go from powerful to small. Sometimes they go from powerful to gone. Sometimes they go from small to big. It happens a lot. You know, like House Velaryon used to be up there with like House Hightower and all the largest houses, and now they're pretty minor. And I think that will happen in the books to some degree, although I think there also may be so much chaos that maybe a lot of it can't work itself out because everybody's so distracted by greater problems. But yeah, I think that's we got another super chat here from Toasty. Thoughts on Qyburn potentially analyzing a white? Yeah. See, this is something I've been really curious about. Like, what is Qyburn going to make of all this undead stuff? Is he going to be, like, fascinated by it? He's like, ooh, fascinating. Yes, I would love to get my hands. Because if it's different than what he did to create Gregor, un-Gregor, then yeah. That's, what do you guys think, Yoke Boy? I know you're a big Qyburn fan.
Yeah. I know I've written some notes for later. We are going to, you know, kind of cover this Qyburn, but just to answer the question, this is right up Qyburn's alley, isn't he? He's probably like, yeah, I did this and I'm not even a White Walker, you know? And I did it to a massive guy.
Yeah, right? How do you do it with these small guys? Yeah, he might learn. What if that, like, he unlocks his ability to make more undead? That would be really unexpected. Yeah. He's like, now with additional information, I can create my own army of these. Actually, what is stopping him from making a bunch more of them? I don't really know. Maybe the specific way that Gregor was killed, like where he was half dead with the poison. I don't know. Maybe there seems to be some indication that Gregor's great stamina and brute strength is part of what made this possible for Qyburn. So it may indicate that he there's more that he can learn about it all. But, you know, maybe that's a stretch. We'll see.
We got another super chat while you were talking from Jason Wells. Keep up the great work, guys. Do you see any realistic scenario where Gendry makes it out of this next episode alive? Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd say I think he's more likely to live than die.
I'm a little down on it. I'm 50-50, which is kind of down on it. But I think that we're definitely going to talk more about it on Saturday, so if you want to tune in there, we're definitely going to have a lot more thoughts on the possibilities, because we're going to analyze some trailer shots. There might be some clues in there. In fact, I'm going to tell you right now, there are some clues, or at least one clue. I won't say what it is, but it gives a hint one way or the other. So we'll talk about that in greater detail, but I'm a little worried about him.
Okay, we'll move on soon, but we have one more super chat from Boba Z.
Flying in here.
Will Tyrion ever tell Dany that her ancestors used saddles and armor when they flew? The Dothraki make nice saddles. Love both your channels. Thanks. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. It's definitely one of the things that bothered me most. I talked about it last week, how it, like, I seriously think it knocked the episode down a solid point for me. It just drove me crazy that she didn't have a saddle. So I don't know about you guys, if you guys think she's ever going to have a saddle.
I don't think it's happening at this point. It's weird that she doesn't at least wear armor, but the other thing too about this is I bet there's some sort of production reason, because she's riding this thing that's not really a dragon. You know, it's like this machine, and maybe it's just difficult for them, a CGI challenge. I don't know. I don't know enough about the background, the technology, but
I would think she probably looks like Buckaroo. If she wore it, that's probably the reason. It probably just looks stupid. Right.
My mental image is a mechanical bull, so it's probably.
I mean, we've already seen behind the scenes footage of her where that is what it looks like. It looks exactly like she's riding a mechanical bull. I wondered myself, when we watched one of the behind the scenes videos, is like, I really wonder if Emilia Clarke has ever gone to ride a mechanical bull and just like
I got this
or something.
I just broke it. Yeah.
Well, not in that sense. Like, just was really good at it. Oh, not killed it. Like, not broke
beat
it. No.
Yeah. Okay. I see. Sorry.
Another.
She was too heavy. She broke it.
We did get another super chat. This is from Mark Joseph, Snow and Winterfell.
Thanks, Mark.
Do we all think Gendry gets dragged into the War for the Dawn in the books? It's a good question.
Yeah,
good question.
I think he does because he's in the Brotherhood.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a while people have theorized about him having a connection in terms of Valyrian steel in the books. And so that's still my thought, is that he might have relevance for the War for the Dawn.
And he has a similar attitude, right?
What's the picture of Yoke Boy on the screen? Because he has a... he has a long-standing idea about Gendry.
Yeah, he's a...
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut
really?
In.
Really? Okay, well, tell us.
Finger up. I was trying not to interrupt you when I interrupted you.
No, please do. Yeah, please do.
Oh, I couldn't see the finger.
Okay, so I've always just thought that it'd be perfect replacement for Donald Noy. You know, if you think, like, you know, have a Baratheon up there when the others come to face off, what could Gendry do? That, you know, being up there making weapons to fight the others, that would be great. And like I said, the Night's Watch never replaced their blacksmith, so he would fit perfectly.
All right. Finally got past our super chest. Do you want to take that? Oh, we got an O'Neill Zolardi's question, finally. Been a watcher for 6 years. Love the show. Love Radio Westeros. You said the Tarleys will go to young Grey of Fagon's side in the book. Why do you believe this is so certain?
Ah, good question. Okay, well, first of all, 6 years you've been watching us. That is amazing. Very few people can claim to have been watching us that long, because that's about as long as we've existed, so...
We got an email from someone about the giveaway recently that said she'd been watching us since she was around 12 years old, and she's 18 now.
12 years old! Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy, but... apparently, I was like, oh, wow. But good
that's
for
impressive.
Her.
So, yeah, so to answer the question... the reason we're so sure is because there's a lot of evidence that Randall Tarly is going to flip to Aegon in the books, and that is a lot of this detail we explain in the Aziz versus chapter episode dedicated to the A Feast for Crows prologue. A lot of it has to do with Randall Tarly's reactions to the Golden Company and to Fagon. He has all these really over the top, like, oh, Aegon, if it even is this, he just says, it's just really over the top how he responds to it all. He just keeps interrupting people who are saying, well, the Golden Company is like, oh, the Golden Company is nothing, you know, and then they talk about, he's like, this boy claimed to be, if it really is, he just keeps, it's really over the top. And you get the sense that Randall Tarly isn't good at this sort of thing. He's not good at subterfuge because he's billed as a soldier, like a great soldier, a great leader and a great fighter. And that type of person is often not so good at subterfuge and lying. And it's almost comical how bad he is at keeping, you know, pretending to say what he's saying. So there's a much more thorough explanation in that episode. If you want to check it out, it's very much like a good portion of that episode is dedicated to what's called the Friends in the Reach theory. That comment, Friends in the Reach, comes from a member of the Golden Company who... I believe it's one of the Peaks, and the Peaks are one of the families in the Reach. And so he says to Fagon and to Connington, he's like, we still have friends in the Reach. You know, those the Tyrells and those folks might be surprised at who still supports the Blackfyres. It was basically the gist of the comment. So the long and short of it is that there are Reach houses that are going to flip to the Blackfyres, guaranteed. And, you know, unless this evidence is a huge red herring, but there's so much of it. So anyway, that's more of an explanation than I intended, but it's there. The evidence is pretty strong once you know to look for it anyway.
As for we had a bullet. Oh, we got another one. I guess I'll wait. Megan Snow. Would a Valyrian hammer be as good as a blade? And no, it wouldn't. Jim McGeehan, something like lawyer, has talked at length about this. We did a Swords of Valyria panel at Con of Thrones, and he talked about you just lose a lot of the benefits of Valyrian steel when it's like. And when it doesn't have all this cutting surface, you want as much of a cutting surface as possible. The fact that it's light doesn't help you that much because you want weight to hammer someone with. So basically, no, it's not ideal. It's a waste of the metal.
However, if you were to make the spike point Valyrian steel,
just the spike would be good.
That would be cool. Just that bit. Yeah.
They're so big and all that.
The great point about the weight. Yeah, that's part of what makes a hammer damaging. So making it lighter isn't actually good.
It's not actually good for that.
We're going to let her take it away. Oops, hang on. Someone jumped in with the super chat just before I could confirm, just before I could say that last bit. So we'll do the super chat and then we'll move on to this annulment bit.
From Boz Maine, what's your opinion on the time loop theories? There seems to be evidence that Bran will affect the past again. Could he have sent the assassin himself? Well, I'm pretty down on time loop theories as much as I think that the fact that it's happened once means it honestly is pretty likely that something else is going to happen in that vein. I do think it's likely. I really don't want it to be the case, though.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't know how likely I think it is. I'm down on the likelihood of it, but part of that is because I really don't like it either. I really don't want that to be the case. But, yeah, it's certainly possible, but I'm real down on that. What do you guys think?
Kind of the same. I think it's hard to separate my own fervent desire for it not to be this thing that they keep revisiting, because it just feels kind of lazy to me as a storytelling device. So I
always hate time travel stuff for the most part. Not always, but it always is like, because it's almost never done right, or you know, it always something about it doesn't make sense, or yeah.
You just always run into the paradox, and it's the same no matter what the show or the movie you're watching. It's the same thoughts that you're having, you know, no matter if they do it well or not, or it's a high budget film, it's the same. You're just exploring this paradox, and it gets rather dull.
We got a super chat from Mark Joseph, the Snow in Winterfell. I'm 20 minutes behind now, sorry. In season trailers, there was fire in the north of the wall scenes, and in the preview for next episode, we see Dany and Tyrion looking serious. Does Dany go north? If so, what's the catalyst? I think it's possible.
Yeah, it's certainly on the table, right? If John, we know that John and them from trailers, it appears they're going to be in pretty grave danger. It looks like it's going to get pretty bad. So the idea of Dany flying in to save them is absolutely possible. I don't want to see that, you know. I'd rather that develop more slowly. The other reason there might be fire in those shots, and I agree that is kind of peculiar, is, well, Beric has a flaming sword, right? They could be. That's a source of fire. They all have torches, too, and they would, you know, that they would want to set the whites on fire because that's a great weapon. And, of course, at some point, as soon as John Wint goes beyond the wall, you got to start thinking about Benjen, right? John beyond the wall, Benjen's said, that's another one who said, he didn't say, I wish you good fortune in the wars to come, but he just looked at Bran and Mirren and said, I wish you good fortune, and didn't say in the wars to come, he just said that. So we know Benjen's coming back at some point. It may not be this episode, it may not be episode 7. I really would think that he will, though. And he had that, you know, swinging fire thing that he was beating up zombies with when he was helping Mira and Bran escape. So there's some options other than Dany for these fires in the north, but she's absolutely a possibility.
I see an interesting question here from Kale Hansen. Could the dragons even go beyond the wall?
Dragons have gone beyond the wall.
So, yeah, there you go. Yeah, was it Alicent?
Actually,
go
that's not
the wall?
True. They didn't necessarily go beyond the wall. The stories that they're told, they're telling their children, whereas that Grandpa Jaehaerys went beyond the wall.
Okay.
But the history only records that they went to the wall.
Yeah, okay. So
I think they could go beyond
the wall. I would think they would be able to, but it's an interesting idea. Certainly, it disturbs the connection that Jon and Ghost have, so I wonder if it might disturb, like, if Dany didn't cross the wall and one of her dragons was on the other side, I wonder if it would disturb her calling them, or I don't know.
Yeah, and also, it's so snowy and windy, I wonder if it would mess up, like, his ability to fly, the dragon's ability to fly. Probably not, because we saw those ravens flying without too much difficulty, but, you know, I suppose there's a chance. The cold could mess with Drogon, too.
You would imagine that the climate would specifically, you know, be bad for dragons, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's really. I'm curious to see how they react to the cold, because they love, like, apparently in book canon they love, like, hanging out in volcanoes and stuff. So, I wonder if the cold is how problematic for them.
Probably they probably like it as much as White Walkers like going on holiday to Hawaii.
Yeah, that took me a second. I would take my dragon to Hawaii also. We hear the dragon lords love to hang out in at Lice because of all the, you know, it's a pleasure spot. You heard it here first, folks. Lice is the equivalent of Hawaii. So you guys, you were asking if Ashea left to go eat. Several people are asking. The answer is yes. She got it, went to go grab a snack.
I saw how many questions there were.
Yeah. So, next question is from Demetrius M. As soon as Glover and Roy started creating unrest, I figured it was Baelish's work. Was the entire Arya Baelish scene a setup to start the rift with Sansa, i.e. a fake spy, the clandestine meeting, and Skrull, etc.? Do you think Baelish anticipated Arya's actions, or is reacting to events? I think she anticipated, maybe that stare that Arya gave Littlefinger was pretty telling. But I think mostly, Littlefinger's angle here is to make himself invaluable to Sansa. He wants to make her need him, you know, because she's not interested in him, so that's his angle, is to make her need him, to make himself important, to make himself invaluable. His army makes himself valuable, but, or the Vale army makes him valuable, but he personally isn't valuable to her, so I think that's his angle.
I would say moreover, Aziz, as well as being invaluable to Sansa, he really wants to sow discord with the goal of eventually putting Sansa versus Jon. You know, because he wants Sansa to seize power. The more Sansa power she has, the more he has. Because, you know, in his twisted little mind, he's going to end up with Sansa. You know, we know he loves her.
Well, what's interesting is that you can see how things might start to unravel, because you have seen here Jon Royce declaring that the Vale army is there for Sansa. They're not there for Littlefinger. So we talked about this a week or two ago, that he doesn't really have any purpose, even though he told her that, you know, that's, you know, he's trying to make her believe that he's the one keeping the veil there. Well, it should now be clear to Sansa that he's not. So he's got to create some sort of purpose for himself. And it'll come down to whether Sansa's willing to buy into that, or whether she's gonna stick with her family. And I think she'll stick with her family.
Cool. All right. From our Beard Guard Lord Commander, George the Golden, can a person killed by a white be animated if they die on the other side of the wall? Like someone is injured north of the wall, then dies of their wounds after passing through the wall. He says, I have no idea. I'm just clueless about how they can pull this mission off. Yeah, I guess, you know, they did bring those whites through before knowing they were whites, and they weren't animated. They were inactive, whatever that means. You know, back in
they were blue-eyed though. That was a thing about them. They were already blue-eyed. They
in
were
the
active.
Book, not the show. Though. Yes, that's the important. You're right.
Oh,
no,
sorry.
Right. No, that's an important
book,
thing to point out. But I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah, it's really creepy in the book when they're like, he didn't have blue eyes, right? And they're like, no, neither did he. Oh, and then the silence. So, yeah.
Hey, let's bring these guys into Castle Black. That's a good idea.
Yeah, we don't know how. I mean, Benjen said he couldn't cross the wall. He's obviously not a the exact same thing, but he's basically, you know, like part white or whatever. It's not exactly clear what he is, but he's certainly undead. Okay, from Darren the Red, Knight of the Forums. Why do you think the Three-Eyed Raven showed Bran flashbacks of his family only to teach him to focus on the bigger picture? Interesting. Maybe because those flashbacks of his family are part of the bigger picture, like Jon's heritage. That could be it. Do you guys have any other thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think that's certainly possible. I think to teach him, you know, he says that he sees everything. So he's going to see all kinds of flashbacks about his family. He has to learn how to focus on what matters and not on every little thing that might interest him as he's surfing around through the Weirnet. So I suppose the three-eyed raven was trying to teach him the difference between the big things and the little things.
We have a question from Bill Coupland who that Eliana also once answered, which is, Shay, I got a banana. I have my coffee and chocolate syrup. What are Yolk Boy and Lady Gwyn eating and drinking? The answer might be nothing. But
I'm drinking water because I'm pure and whole.
What? You're really disappointing us here, not drinking tea. That's what we all, that's all our prejudices about English people.
Hey, I put it in a tea cup.
Okay. Half credit. And Lady Gwyn?
I had tea in my, I don't know if you can
see
that.
She's holding the tea fort down here. The tea fort.
I've got two drinks, actually.
In my, Lady of the Tea Fort, in my Grinch mug every week. And water, too.
I had one of our sparkling ice drinks that we love that are those sugar substitute drinks to replace our soda addiction.
Yep.
Fizzy stuff added to it, so.
Sarvesh wants to know, is that the dire cat passing? But yes, that was one of our dire cats shaking the screen again.
That was part of why I got up, actually, is that two of the cats were fighting with each other. So I was like, I will break them up and get some food.
And if they don't break it up, she's going to eat one.
Oh, someone says they have that same green mug with Rudolph.
Whoa, that's a crazy coincidence.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble. Not such a coincidence. Lots of people that are listening to this will have gone to Barnes & Noble.
Another question here is it not common knowledge that Cersei has an undead Kingsguard? Why do they think she needs proof of whites being possible? I don't think it is common knowledge. In the books, the other Kingsguard are not so sure. They're very creeped out by him, and they note how he doesn't talk or use the bathroom or eat, but they don't seem to fully understand what's going on. And I think that's the way it is. I think most people don't really get it. I think he's creepy and they're not sure, but it's common knowledge that he's creepy and something's up, but I don't think it's common knowledge that he's undead, that is the answer to what's up. You know what I mean? So
most of the giveaways for like the, you know, the general populace to know that they wouldn't know that he doesn't go to the toilet.
Yeah.
So it would be confined to the people around in like the Kingsguard and, you know, the people serving Cersei that are around her a lot. And they probably are too scared to air their suspicions with Cersei, you know.
Also,
Cersei wouldn't.
You know, remember that in the show, it was never put about that Gregor had died because they don't have the whole Gregor's head going to Dorne plot.
Right.
So they very openly call him Sir Gregor, whereas in the books, they told everyone that Gregor Clegane was dead and then sent his head allegedly to Dorne, and now they have this Sir Gregor-like Kingsguard called Robert Strong. So they all have reason, they have more reason to be suspicious in the books, I guess, is the point.
Okay, question from Dana the Dreamy. Littlefinger up. Look, we got Xerxes on screen, everybody. Take a look, we got a dire cat.
Look at the camera.
Dana the Dreamy says, Littlefinger is an amazing character schemer. Could it be that he picked Royce and the Northern Lord on purpose in order to use Arya as a human weapon to kill them for him? Like, incriminating them by making it look like they're part of his schemes. That is pretty clever. I kind of like that. The question continues, wasn't he also very anti-Littlefinger in the books? Yes, he was very anti-Littlefinger. He's very anti-Littlefinger in the show, too. Just, just Littlefinger threatened him and kind of made him back down. So, yeah. These cats are out of control today. So let's continue here. Christian Mertes. Actually, just to say, I think that's a good theory. It might be possible. I am worried that Arya will go too far and kill one of these lords because she thinks it's the right thing to do and it'll mess some things up. Question from Kristen Mertes. 15 gold dragons to pay off a gold cloak. Either the show uses different currency somehow, or those gold cloaks are all in it until they finally find their first smuggler, after which they are set for life, or the prices show that the economy of Seven Kingdoms is in deep doo-doo already, and winter has barely begun. What do you think?
I like that you kept yourself from saying that when I've said many swear words over the years on this podcast. You can't say shit, apparently.
Shit. Okay, there we go. I think that the show uses different currency, because even one gold dragon would be a huge bribe at this point. Gold is, a one gold dragon is worth a ton. Pate, at the a Feast for Crows chapter, Pate thinks to himself that he's never, ever going to save up for a gold dragon. It's that out of reach. So gold is just really, really valuable. So I think it's just a totally different currency. Because, yeah, 5 gold, even 5, 15 is an absurd sum for a bribe. 5 is also based on book currency. So anyway.
Do you think Davos went back and looted them?
Yeah, he should. They seem to be getting out of there.
And, he should have.
Yeah, that's a lot of money, right?
But, you know, as evidence that the kind of currency in Westeros is maybe not as well thought out as we could give it credit for, is, have you ever seen the threads about Sandor's winnings? People figuring out how what Sandor won at the tourney of the hand, and then he allegedly just carried it in his saddlebags, yeah. And like what it would actually have amounted to if he had come off with that many gold dragons.
I think the idea for that has to be that gold dragons are really, really light. The only way for that to work is that they're super thin.
They're not actually made of gold. Yeah. It's just metaphorical.
They're made of Valyrian
gold.
Steel, extra light.
Valyrian steel dragons.
That's hilarious.
We got a super chat here from Nate Hartswick. Can any White Walker raise the dead or just the Night King? Interesting question. I guess we haven't technically seen anyone but him do it.
Yeah, in the opener of the show, though, there's no Night King in the opening scene, and they raise the dead. Maybe he's just off screen or something. Yeah. I think any of them can.
Yeah,
that's my guess.
So too. Especially because I tend to think that, well, we have that thought about whether there was another Night King in the past, because obviously we saw him with a beard in that one painting, and so we theorized about whether there were previous Night Kings. But I obviously they have the spikes on their heads, so like... Can any White Walker eventually become a Night King and just get that hairstyle? I don't know.
Yeah.
Or how does another Night King get formed, I guess?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, hopefully they'll explain it. But right now it's hard to say. But I just certainly lean on the side of they can all do it. Especially because I've always conceived of their ability to raise and manipulate the dead as sort of like a skin changer thing, where they can skin change into dead bodies rather than into living animals or creatures. And... So I think they all have that power.
We got another super chat from Acre Frey.
Hey.
Currency devalues when you can turn iron into gold.
That's true. It sure does. Very true. We have a question from Joseph Wilson. Multi-part question. We're going to take some of it we've answered already. He agrees with me that Old Town is a worry of the week. And he's wonders what Euron is up to. I guess we've talked about that already. But another part of the question is, in the annulment scene, Sam goes shifty-eyed after telling Gilly what an annulment is. Maybe nothing, but could he be feeling guilty for not marrying her? I mean, we know he can't because of his vows, but maybe he feels like he should marry her because of their relationship and the commitment they've made to each other. I don't know. You guys think... Do you think he needs to marry her in order to get that child to inherit Hornhill? I don't think so. I think if the child has Tarly blood, that's good enough. I mean, they're presenting the child as having Tarly blood. We know he doesn't. So, I don't know if anyone has a take on that, but I think I don't think they need to get married. That doesn't seem necessary. But I think he... I don't know.
They're in a desperate situation otherwise, aren't they?
Yeah, they kind of are. I think he feels guilty for not being able to be fully invested in her in the way he wants to be, but he also, I think she understands his vows, at least on some level, that he takes them seriously. And I don't think that, I'm not sure that wildlings are big on the concept of marriage anyway, right? They have their whole stealing and they have their relationships, but, you know, and they're certainly have marriages, but I don't know that it's important for them to declare themselves as married. I don't know. Maybe we need to learn a little more about wildling culture to back that up. Q&A from Ingrid Rossi. Regarding the annulment of the marriage with Elia, do you think the books will go that way? I think we already kind of established, we kind of talked about that. Mm-hmm. I think no was the consensus. I have the feeling George R. R. Martin wouldn't have Rhaegar just dismiss his wife and children like that in the middle of a war, and would be more likely to have Rhaegar just marry Lyanna as well, since there are precedents, although just two bigamy in the Targaryen dynasty, or polygamy. Yeah, I think we mostly covered that already, but just to reiterate, yeah, I think that is more, I think the double marriage is, like Lady Gwyn said, that's probably more likely than an annulment. But I guess they're both on the table. I guess they're both possible. Do you have anything to add to that, Lady Gwyn, or do you think you just pretty covered it pretty well earlier?
Yeah, I think we covered it pretty well earlier. Although I reiterate that there's more than two of, you know, examples of polygamy, and George has clearly left the door open for there to be
There's others. Two that are known, right? But I mean, we know that, and we know all the Targaryen kings. There's no like missing Targaryen kings. We don't know everything all of them did, but there's nothing, there's no like second wives on the family tree. But that doesn't mean like some of the princes couldn't have had, and it could have been right. Like, especially go back before Aegon the Conqueror, you know, maybe, because it said Aegon having two wives was unusual, but certainly not unheard of. So, yeah, although those wouldn't have been Targaryen kings, but they would be Targaryens. So, yeah. All right. Try to get through a few more here. We have an awesome name, patron Remorseful Rob, a poor shipwrecked swab. He now stands with Ed against the undead mob. What do you think Theon and the Ironborn think of Jon's resurrection? He is that which is dead that never dies. You think it could have a role to play in the story?
Doubtful that it'll have any role to play in the story, just because we've seen so little of the Ironborn or anything like that. What and we've book, seen so little of Jon sharing his being undead.
It's true. Theon doesn't
but
even
in the book,
know.
But in the book, the interesting thought, I also think Jon isn't going to spread that around for a long time. I think it'll be similar, that he'll keep it close to his chest, pun intended.
His heart. That's awesome.
I don't know if you guys feel differently.
No, not really.
I mean,
I'm with you there, I think, yeah.
Okay. I would love it if the Ironborn just started worshiping the lights.
Like, this is the best thing ever.
That would be a twist. We have from Erse Palas, not a question, but she says, or he says, I made this comment on Smokescreen's channel. Shout out to Smokescreen, our friend Chris there. But can we please, please call Davos's aphrodisiac dish Nimble Dick Crab? Nice. That's the second good pun I've seen for what that food should be called. What was the other one? It was Afro Davosiac. Wait,
that's great.
Okay, from Luzana from Denmark. Hi to Denmark. I don't know that we have a lot of listeners in Denmark.
Well, you probably
awesome.
Do too. We have several from Denmark, so I bet you do as well.
Cool. Yes. Yeah, we probably have more than I realize. The question is, can you guys discuss the parallels of Dany executing the Tarleys herself as they do in the North, swinging the sword herself while looking them in the eyes? She did look them in the eyes. I guess she didn't swing the sword. She said the Dracarys, but that's pretty close.
Swinging the sword, that's making Dragon do it.
Maybe that's kind of like feeding your direwolf in the North.
I think metaphorically, you know, what that means is you owe it to that person. It says to look him in the eye. Before you kill him, if you're going to pass that sentence on someone. And I'm metaphorically, she certainly did that. She stood there and she looked him in the eye and said, you're, you know.
I think it was Drogon that swung the sword.
The flaming sword. He swung Lightbringer there.
Oh, this is a good pun. I just want to share this from Sarvesh. Is Robert Strong a Firewhite since he was resurrected by Kai Burn?
No. All right.
That's a good one.
Here's one from Stephen Shacknees. Is if there is an eclipse in one of the next two episodes, do you think that Dan and Dave started the season late so it would coincide with this month's real-life solar eclipse like they did with Mother's Day? Didn't they do it with Father's Day also?
Yeah, they did. They did it with Mother's and Father's Day.
Well, given that the pattern has been established, I wouldn't put it past
them. I wouldn't put it past them, but I just don't see it happening in this next episode. And the week after that, we don't... eclipse is passed. I guess it would still be the same month. It would be on people's mind.
Yeah.
I think it's way more likely to be next season, though.
I think our friend LML was really hoping for that. Mythical Astronomy is like, yeah, give us that. Brian Johnson wants to know, if John's parents had survived to smooth things over, how possible is it that John and Danny would have been betrothed? Oof, I guess that's possible. Yeah, they would have been, you know, both Targaryen, you know, princelings, prince and princesses, and they often wind up married. But Danny would have been the only girl besides Rhaenys. So, yeah, that's possible. That's entirely possible. We now have a cat that's seen a bug, and he's chasing the bug, and it's throwing everything off. Both cats are chasing a bug.
Okay.
We have full cat thunder. Ooh. We have one question, or two questions left. No, one, yeah. Two questions left. From Juan Felipe Mendez, I wish I could super chat you guys. I love the live streams and the podcast. If you see this, please send my love to Radio Westeros.
Hey, Juan.
Love back to you.
Right on. I have to go, but I'll finish hearing the podcast when it comes. Cool. Well, we'll certainly get that up as soon as possible.
You'll have a nice surprise right here.
That's right. And he also has a question. Does Arya know that Littlefinger knows? know? Does he? What is he referring to?
Does Arya know that Littlefinger knows that she was going in there to his room?
Oh,
does she know Littlefinger's watching, or do you think she? I hope.
Yeah, I hope that she did too.
Dan and Dave in behind the episode said no, but they might be being coy.
She would have been keeping up the deceit while she was in the room with no one there. She certainly acted like she was surprised when she found that letter, and there's certainly no one around.
I mean, I don't think that she knows about what the letter is, and I think she still could be surprised by that, but I think I would like to know that she is good enough as a faceless man that she didn't miss Littlefinger, like, lurking about watching her. Just my thought. That said, she didn't finish her training, so it's not like she should be this amazing faceless man necessarily, so I could see it both ways.
Okay.
I think Littlefinger needs to be outplayed by another Stark. Let's say that.
All right, so I think that does it for the questions. We're close to 3 hours, so it's time to do our wrap-up and thanks and outro and all that business.